Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we're going to read chapters 49 to 50, and in the previous episode, we read chapters 47 to 48, in which we saw that the Earth Mother was finally rising, and our lovely Octavian had ended up crashing, or escaping, the entire battle that was happening between Nico and his Roman army. In fear of the Earth Mother rising. So, we will now move on to see what exactly Jason and the rest of the demigods are up to since their last appearance as they were fighting a bunch of monsters. So now we're going to read chapter 49, Jason. Jason had heard of someone's life flashing before his eyes, but he didn't think it would be like this. Standing with his friends in a defensive ring surrounded by giants, then looking up at an impossible vision in the sky, Jason could very clearly picture himself 50 years in the future. He was sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch of a house on the California coast. Piper was serving lemonade, her hair was gray, deep lines etched the corners of her eyes, but she was still as beautiful as ever. Jason's grandchildren sat around his feet and he was trying to explain to them what had happened on his day in Athens. "No, I'm serious," he said. "Just 6 demigods on the ground and 1 more in a burning ship above the Acropolis. We were surrounded by 30-foot-tall giants who were about to kill us. Then the sky opened up, and the gods descended."
"Granddad," the kid said, "you are full of schist."
"No, I'm not kidding," he protested. "The Olympian gods chain came charging out of the heavens on their war chariots. Trumpets blaring, swords flaming, and your great-grandfather, the king of the gods, led the charge, a javelin of pure electricity crackling in his hand." His grandkids laughed at him, and Piper glanced over, smiling like, "Would you believe it, if you hadn't been there?" But Jason was there. He looked up as the clouds parted over the Acropolis, and he almost doubted the new prescription lens Asclepius had given him. Instead of blue skies, he saw black space spangled with stars, the palaces of Mount Olympus gleaming silver and gold in the background, and an army of gods charged down from on high. It was too much to process, and it was probably better for his health that he didn't see it all. Only later would Jason be able to remember bits and pieces. There was supersized Jupiter. No. This was Zeus. His original form riding into battle in a golden chariot, a lightning bolt the size of a telephone pole crackling in one hand. Pulling his chariot were 4 horses made of wind, each constantly shifting from equine to human form, trying to break free. For a split second, one took on the icy visage of Boreas, another wore Notus's swirling crown of fire and steam. A third flashed the smug, lazy smile of Zephyrus. Zeus had bound and harnessed the 4 wind gods themselves. On the underbelly of the Argo II, the glass bay doors split open. The goddess Nike tumbled out free from her golden net. She spread her glittering wings and soared to Zeus's side, taking her rightful place as his charioteer.
"My mind is restored," she roared. "Victory to the gods!"
At Zeus's left flank rode Hera, her chariot pulled by enormous peacocks, their rainbow-colored plumage so bright it gave Jason the spins. Ares bellowed with glee as he thundered down on the back of a fire-breathing horse. His spear glistened red. In the last second before the gods reached the Parthenon, they seemed to displace themselves like they jumped through hyperspace. The chariots disappeared. Suddenly, Jason and his friends were surrounded by Olympians, now human-sized, tiny next to the giants, but glowing with power. Jason shouted and charged Porphyrion. His friends joined in the carnage. The fighting ranged all over the Parthenon and spilled across the Acropolis. Out of the corner of his eye, Jason saw Annabeth fighting Enceladus. At her side stood a woman with long dark hair and golden armor over her white robes. The goddess thrust her spear at the giant, then brandished her shield with the fearsome bronzed visage of Medusa. Together, Athena and Annabeth drove Enceladus back into the nearest wall of metal scaffolding, which collapsed on top of him. On the opposite side of the temple, Frank Zhang and the god Ares smashed through an entire phalanx of giants. Ares with a spear and shield, Frank, as an African elephant, with its trunk and feet. The war god laughed and stabbed and disemboweled like a kid destroying piñatas. Hazel raced through the battle on Arian's back, disappearing in the mist whenever a giant came close, then appearing behind him and stabbing him in the back. The goddess Hecate danced in her wake, Cytus setting fire to her enemies with two blazing torches. Jason didn't see Hades, but whenever a giant stumbled and fell, the ground broke open and the giant was snapped up and swallowed. Percy battled the giant twins, Otis and Ephialtes, while at his side fought a bearded man with a trident and a loud Hawaiian shirt. The twin giants stumbled, Poseidon's trident morphed into a fire horse, and the gods sprayed the giants out of the Parthenon with a high-powered blast in the shape of wild horses. Piper was maybe the most impressive. She fenced with the giant's paraboia, sword against sword. Despite the fact that her opponent was five times larger, Piper seemed to be holding her own. The goddess Aphrodite floated around them on a small white cloud, spewing rose petals in the giant's eyes and calling encouragement to Piper. "Lovely, my dear! Yes, good! Hit her again!" Whenever Paraboya tried to strike, doves rose up from nowhere and fluttered in the giantess's face. As for Leo, he was racing across the deck of the Argo II, shooting ballistae, dropping hammers on the giant's head, and blowtorching their loincloths. Behind him at the helm, a burly bearded guy in a mechanic's uniform was tinkering with the controls, furiously trying to keep the shift aloft. The strangest sight was the old giant Thune, who was getting bludgeoned to death by three old ladies with brass clubs. The Fates, armed for war. Jason decided there was nothing in the world scarier than a gang of bat-wielding grannies. He noticed all these things and a dozen other melees in progress, but most of his attention was fixed on the enemy before him. Porphyrion, the giant king, and on the god who fought by Jason's side, Zeus. "My father," Jason thought in disbelief. Porphyrion didn't give him much chance to savor the moment. The giant used his spear in a whirlwind of swipes, jabs, and slashes. It was all Jason could do to stay alive. Still, Zeus's presence felt reassuringly familiar. Even though Jason had never met his father, he was reminded of all of his happiest moments. His birthday picnic with Piper in Rome, the day Lupa showed him Camp Jupiter for the first time, his games of hide-and-seek with Talia in their apartment when he was tiny, an afternoon on the beach when his mother had picked him up, kissed him, and showed him an oncoming storm. "Never be afraid of a thunderstorm, Jason. That is your father letting you know he loves you." Zeus smelled of rain and air and clean wind. He made the air burn with energy. Up close, his lightning bolt appeared as a bronze rod, a meter long, pointed on both ends with blades of energy extending from both sides to form a javelin of white electricity. He slashed across the giant's path, and Porphyrion collapsed into his makeshift throne, which crumbled under the giant's weight. "No throne for you," Zeus growled. "Not here, not ever." "You cannot stop us," the giant yelled. "It is done. The Earth Mother is awake." In answer, Zeus blasted the throne to rubble. The giant king flew backward out of the temple, and Jason ran after him, his father at his heels. They backed Porphyrion to the edge of the cliffs, the whole of modern Athens spread out below. Lightning had melted all the weapons in the giant's hair. Molten celestial bronze dripped through his dreadlocks like caramel. His skin steamed and blistered. Porphyrion snarled and raised his spear. "Your cause is lost, Zeus. Even if you defeat me, the Earth Mother shall simply raise me again." "Then perhaps," Zeus said, "you should not die in the embrace of Gaia. Jason, my son." Jason had never felt so good, so recognized, as when his father said his name, it was like last winter at Camp Half-Blood when his erased memories finally returned. Jason suddenly understood another layer of his existence, a part of his identity that had been cloudy before. Now he had no doubt. He was a son of Jupiter, god of the sky. He was his father's child. Jason advanced. Porphyrion lashed out wildly with his spear, but Jason cut it in half with his gladius. He charged in, jabbing his sword through the giant's breastplate, then summoned the winds and blasted Porphyrion off the edge of the cliff. As the giant fell, screaming, Zeus pointed his lightning bolt. An arc of pure white heat vaporized Porphyrion in midair. His ashes drifted down in a gentle cloud, dusting the tops of the olive trees on the slopes of the Acropolis. Zeus turned to Jason. His lightning bolt flickered off, and Zeus clipped the celestial bronze rod to his belt. The god's eyes were stormy gray. His salt and pepper hair and his beard looked like stratus clouds. Jason found it strange that the Lord of the Universe, King of Olympus, was only a few inches taller than he was. "My son," Zeus clasped Jason's shoulder. "There is so much I would like to tell you." The god took a heavy breath, making the air crackle and Jason's new glasses fog up. "Alas, as the king of the gods, I must not show favoritism to my children. When we return to the other Olympians, I will not be able to praise you as much as I would like, or give you as much credit as you deserve." "I don't want praise," Jason's voice quavered. "Just a little time together would be nice. I mean, I don't even know you." Zeus's gaze was as far away as the ozone layer. "I'm always with you, Jason. I have watched your progress with pride, but it will never be possible for us to be." He curled his fingers as if trying to pluck the right words out of the air. "Close. Normal. A true father and son. From birth, you were destined to be Hera's, to appease her wrath. Even your name, Jason, was her choice. You did not ask for this. I did not want it. But when I gave you over to her, I had no idea what a good man you would become. Your journey has shaped you, made you both kind and great. Whatever happens when we return to the Parthenon, I know that I do not hold you accountable. You have proven yourself a true hero." Jason's emotions were a jumble in his chest. "What do you mean, whatever happens?" "The worst is not over," Zeus warned, "and someone must take the blame for what has happened. Come." And that is the end of chapter 49. Wow, what a fascinating chapter. I mean, I even got goosebumps as I was reading that chapter. It's just amazing and just so fascinating to see how all the gods were there at the demigods' sides. How they were finally able to have that moment with their children that they longed for and that their children longed for and had finally gotten it after such a long time. Parent and child fighting next to each other against a monster. I mean, it's probably the best feeling in the world for these demigods. But it's very fascinating to see what exactly Zeus had told Jason. And I think that we will get our answers and all of our questions solved after the break, when we read chapter 50, Jason, and see what exactly was Zeus pertaining to when he said someone had to take the blame. So, we'll see you after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back from the ads, and now we're going to read chapter 50, Jason. Nothing was left to the giants except heaps of ash, a few spears, and some burning dreadlocks. The Argo II was still aloft, barely moored to the top of the Parthenon. Half the ship's oars were broken off or tangled. Smoke streamed from several large splits in the hull. The sails were peppered with burning holes. Leo looked almost as bad. He stood in the midst of the temple with the other crew members, his face covered in soot, his clothes smoldering. The gods fanned out in a semicircle as Zeus approached. None of them seemed particularly joyful about their victory. Apollo and Artemis stood together in the shadow of a column, as if trying to hide. Hera and Poseidon were having an intense discussion with another goddess in green and gold robes, perhaps Demeter. Nike tried to put a golden laurel wreath on Hecate's head, but the goddess of magic swatted it away. Hermes sneaked closer to Athena, attempting to put his arm around her. Athena turned her Aegis shield his way, and Hermes scuffled off. The only Olympian who seemed in a good mood was Ares. He laughed and pantomimed, gutting an enemy while Frank listened, his expression polite but queasy. "Brethren," Zeus said, We are healed thanks to the work of these demigods. The Athena Parthenos, which once stood in this temple, now stands at Camp Half-Blood. It has united our offspring and thus our own essences. Lord Zeus, Piper spoke up. Is Reyna okay, Nico and Coach Hedge? Jason couldn't quite believe Piper was asking after Reyna's health, but it made him glad. Zeus knit his cloud-colored eyebrows. They succeeded in their mission. As of this moment, they are alive. Whether or not they're okay, there is still work to be done, Queen Hera interrupted. She spread her arms like she wanted a group hug. But my heroes, you have triumphed over the giants as I knew you would. My plan succeeded beautifully. Zeus turned on his wife. Thunder shook the Acropolis. Hera, do not dare take credit. You've caused at least as many problems as you've fixed. The Queen of Heaven blanched. Husband, surely you see now this was the only way. There is never only one way, Zeus bellowed. That is why there are three fates, not one. Is this not so? By the ruins of the Giant King's throne, the three old ladies silently bowed their heads in recognition. Jason noticed that the other gods stayed well away from the fates in their gleaming brass clubs. Please, husband! Hera tried for a smile, but she was so clearly frightened that Jason almost felt sorry for her. I only did what I... Silence! Zeus snapped. You disobeyed my orders. Nevertheless, I recognize that you acted with honest intentions. The valor of these seven heroes has proven that you were not entirely without wisdom. Hera looked like she wanted to argue, but she kept her mouth shut. Apollo, however... Zeus glared into the shadows where the twins were standing. My son, come here. Apollo inched forward like he was walking the plank. He looked so much like a teenage demigod it was unnerving. No more than 17, wearing jeans and a Camp Half-Blood t-shirt. With a bow over his shoulder and a sword at his belt, with his two-slit blonde hair and blue eyes, he might have been Jason's brother on the mortal side as well as the godly side. Jason wondered if Apollo had assumed this form to be inconspicuous or to look pitiable to his father. The fear in Apollo's face certainly looked real and also very human. The three fates gathered around the god, circling him, their withered hands raised. Twice you have defied me, Zeus said. Apollo moistened his lips. My lord, you neglected your duties. You succumbed to flattery and vanity. You encouraged your descendant Octavian to follow his dangerous path, and you prematurely revealed a prophecy that may yet destroy us all. But enough, Zeus boomed. We will speak of your punishment later. For now, you will wait on Olympus. Zeus flicked his hand, and Apollo turned into a cloud of glitter. The fates swirled around him, dissolving into air, and the glittery whirlwind shot into the sky. What will happen to him? Jason asked. The gods stared at him, but Jason didn't care. Having actually met Zeus, he had a newfound sympathy for Apollo. It is not your concern, Zeus said. We have other problems to address. An uncomfortable silence settled over the Parthenon. It didn't feel right to let the matter go. Jason didn't see how Apollo deserved to be singled out for punishment. Someone must take the blame, Zeus had said. But why? Father, Jason said, I made a vow to honor all the gods. I promised Kimopolia that once this war is over, none of the gods would be without shrines at the camps. Zeus scowled. That's fine, but... Kim who? Poseidon coughed into his fist. She's one of mine. My point, Jason said, is that blaming each other isn't going to solve anything. That's how the Romans and Greeks got divided in the first place. The air became dangerously ionized. Jason's scalp tingled. He realized he was risking his father's wrath. He might get turned into glitter or blasted off into the Acropolis. He'd known his dad for 5 minutes and made a good impression. Now he was throwing it away. A good Roman wouldn't keep talking. Jason kept talking. Apollo wasn't the problem. To punish him for Gaia waking is... He wanted to say stupid, but he caught himself. Unwise. Unwise. Zeus's voice was almost a whisper. Before the assembled gods, you would call me unwise. Jason's friends watched on full alert. Percy looked like he was ready to jump in and fight at his side. Then Artemis stepped out of the shadows. Father, this hero has fought long and hard for our cause. His nerves are frayed. We should take that into account. Jason started to protest, but Artemis stopped him with a glance. Her expression sent a message so clear she might have been speaking in his mind. Thank you, demigod, but do not press this. I will reason with Zeus when he's calmer. Surely, father, the goddess continued, we should attend to our more pressing problems, as you pointed out. Gaia, Annabeth chimed in, clearly anxious to change the topic. She's awake, isn't she? Zeus turned toward her. Around Jason, the air molecules stopped humming. His skull felt like it had just come out of the microwave.
That is correct, Zeus said. The blood of Olympus was spilled. She is fully conscious.
Oh, come on, Percy complained. I get a little nosebleed and I wake up the entire Earth. That's not fair.
Athena shouldered her aegis.
Complaining of unfairness is like assigning blame, Percy Jackson. It does no one any good.
She gave Jason an approving glance.
Now you must move quickly. Gaia rises to destroy your camp.
Poseidon leaned on his trident.
For once, Athena's right.
For once? Athena protested.
Why would Gaia be back at camp? Leo asked. Percy's nosebleed was here.
Dude, Percy said. First off, you heard Athena. Don't blame my nose. Second, Gaia's the Earth. She can pop up anywhere she wants. Besides, she told us she was going to do this. She said the first thing on her to-do list was destroying our camp. Question is, how do we stop her?
Frank looked at Zeus.
Sir?
Your Majesty, can't you gods just, pop over there with us? You've got the chariots and the magic powers and whatnot.
Yes, Hazel said. We defeated the giants together in 2 seconds. Let's all go.
No, Zeus said flatly.
No? Jason asked. But father...
Zeus's eyes sparked with power, and Jason realized he pushed his dad as far as he could for today. Maybe for the next few centuries.
That's the problem with prophecies, Zeus growled. When Apollo allowed the prophecy of 7 to be spoken, and when Hera took it upon herself to interpret the words, the fates wove the future in such a way that it had only so many possible outcomes, so many solutions. You 7, the demigods, are destined to defeat Gaia. We, the gods, cannot.
I don't get it, Piper said. What's the point of being gods if you have to rely on puny mortals to do your bidding?
All the gods exchanged dark looks. Aphrodite, however, laughed gently and kissed her daughter.
My dear Piper, don't you think we've been asking ourselves that question for thousands of years?
But it is what binds us together,
keeps us eternal. We need you mortals as much as you need us. Annoying as that may be, it's the truth.
Frank shuffled uncomfortably, like he missed being an elephant.
So, how can we possibly get to Camp Half-Blood in time to save it? It took us months to reach Greece.
The winds, Jason said. Father, can't you unleash the winds to send our ships back?
Zeus glowered.
I could slap you back to Long Island.
Was that a joke or a threat or a...
No, Zeus said. I mean it quite literally. I could slap your ship back to Camp Half-Blood.
But the force involved...
Over the ruined giant throne, the grungy god in the mechanic's uniform shook his head.
My boy Leo built a good ship, but it won't sustain that kind of stress. It would break apart as soon as it arrived, maybe sooner.
Leo strained his tool belt.
The Argo II can make it. It only has to stay in one piece, long enough to get us back home. Once there, we can abandon ship.
Dangerous, warned Hephaestus.
Perhaps fatal.
The goddess Nike twirled a laurel wreath on her finger.
Victory is always dangerous, and it often requires sacrifice. Leo Valdis and I have discussed this.
She stared pointedly at Leo. Jason didn't like that at all. He remembered Asclepius's grim expression when the doctor had examined Leo.
Oh my. Oh, I see.
Jason knew what they had to do to defeat Gaia. He knew the risks, but he wanted to take those risks himself, not put them on Leo.
Piper will have the physician's cure, he told himself. She'll keep us both covered.
Leo?
Annabeth said.
What is Nike talking about?
Leo waved off the question.
Meh,
the visual.
The usual. Victory, sacrifice, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. We can do this, guys. We have to do this.
A feeling of dread settled over Jason. Zeus was correct about one thing. The worst was yet to come.
When the choice comes, noticed the south wind had told him, storm or fire, do not despair.
Jason made the choice. Leo's right. All aboard for one last trip.
And that's the end of chapter 50.
This seems like a very bittersweet chapter. It looks like we might finally see who is going to perish. And it won't be the fire. It will indeed be the storm that finally gives its last thunder. It's quite fascinating to see how a lot of these demigods, they have such complex feelings, such complex emotions, frustrations against the situations they've been put in. The parents, the godly parents that they've had to face, and just the monsters. And then you see that deep down behind all those complexities, at the bottom of the iceberg, is someone who cares about the others around them. And I think that Jason is a great example of the demigod that cares for others. I will definitely say that Jason has been such a valuable person, emotionally, mentally. He's been a support to every single demigod. He's served as an inspiration for every single demigod. But it's sad to see that he will be the one that is sacrificed. In a perfect world, neither of them would have to perish. But the prophecy gives them no choice. And Jason had decided to take it upon himself. For I believe that he will be a very, very valiant hero that is to be remembered. And that concludes our reading for today's episode. Couple of disclaimers before we go into the Q&A session is that, number one, if I skip your question or your name, please do let me know, and I will try my best to get you in the next episode. However, they do come with another set of disclaimers. The first one is that sometimes if I see a question, sometimes I feel that it is a bit personal for me to answer at the moment, and I don't feel comfortable answering it at the moment. That isn't to say that I discourage any of my fans to stop asking questions. Be curious. But I would hope that nobody's feelings are hurt if I do not answer their questions. Additionally, if I believe that I have answered your question in the past, I will also not answer that question now. I highly recommend you check out previous episodes and see where those questions are. So, without further ado, let's start with the Q&A session. First one, if you can be any god you create or represent, what name would you choose and what power? Most likely I'm someone who's a very, very big cheese lover. I really like dairy. I really like ice cream. So I most likely do be the god of milk. And probably the Latin word for milk would most likely be the name of the god as well. Next question is, if you could be any Greek god, who would you be? Most likely I would be Hypnos, the god of sleep. Or Demeter, the goddess of harvest. Because I really like sleep and food a lot. Next question is, worst demigod of all time? Octavian, hands down. Octavian. Next question is, whose fate was the most intense? I would definitely say... If I had to think about it, I'd probably say Zoe Nightshade. I mean, the fact that she had perished under her father's hand probably makes it a lot worse, considering the fact that it was her father who led her to her end, and not any monster of some kind. So I would probably say that was the most intense, personally, for me. Next question is, where would you be in the war if you were a demigod? Most likely, I would be at Camp Half-Blood, building forges and just protecting ourselves from the Roman demigods, or coming up with plans to save Camp Half-Blood from the rise of Gaia. Next one, would you rather be a titan or a giant?
I would probably be a Titan. And maybe help out Tyson as well. No, he's a Cyclops. Is that a giant? I believe that's a giant. Or is it a Titan? I think that's a Titan. Yes, I would be a Titan so I could fight alongside Tyson. Next question is, what do you think Percy would have been the god of if he had taken Zeus's offer? Most likely, I think that he would have been just the god version of a camp counselor. So he would be the god of demigods, more like where demigods would air their complaints or just anything they wanted to communicate to the gods, Percy would be there. I do realize Hermes is the messenger of the gods, but this would be more like representing the opinions of the gods, in my opinion. But yes, that concludes the end of our Q&A session and the end of our episode. Thank you guys for listening to this, and I hope you guys have a great rest of the week. And until next episode, stay safe and stay out of boredom.